good afternoon. Yes, I'm a little hoarse, husky voice here. Been a week, let me tell you what. Snow or no snow, it's been a week. Snow was pretty, but didn't get out to enjoy it very much. And for the two in our family that did get out to enjoy it, they're both upstairs. One's in a leg brace, and the other still has her ice down. It was not a good week around this house, and then I got sick. I hope you enjoyed being out in it. I got out in it just for a little while and took a few pictures. But boy, it was pretty from the inside. And there's still a little bit out there. I guess the rain will probably take care of most of it. But a little husky, so y'all bear with me. You won't have to listen to me for the whole show. Brian New, second year on the Elite Series. Great story. A really cool guy to know and to have been around, and who has earned his way onto the Elite schedule, the Elite Series, in one of the hardest ways it is, and people that'll fished it will tell you the Opens is not an easy way to make it to the Elites. He's going to be with us. Got a couple segments, and then the fourth segment, we'll just see what happens with that one. So bear with me, but I kind of want to come out and hammer you over the head with something, and it's something for hunters especially, but the non-hunting public, for those of you who listen who don't hunt, it's something that we've all got to address, hunters especially, because I'm not apologizing for hunting, don't get me wrong at all. I'm just trying to keep hunting what it really should be, and that's kind of a tough thing to come up with. But one of the issues out there is fair chase, and the fair chase statement is drawn up by the Boone and Crockett Club. Fair chase, as defined by the Boone and Crockett Club, is the ethical, sportsmanlike, and lawful pursuit and taking of any free-ranging wild game animal in a manner that does not give the hunter an improper or unfair advantage over the game animals. That is a statement, that is a thought or a statement that we are really going to have to put some discussions behind. In the hunting community, and in the community as general, and it's brought about by a couple of events out west, most notably by Arizona, who back in 2018 took the first step to outlaw game cameras that have the instant they take a picture, it sends it to your cell phone. They have taken an additional step here over the last little bit to ban trail cameras now, and most people don't take time to read the behind and the why, and they go off on it's government overreach and whatever, and it's just about money or whatever else, but it's not. I mean, out west, hunting is different. If you've ever been out there, it's wide open. There's not a canopy like they're here in the east. They don't allow drones out west. You can't fly the same day you hunt out west simply because the territory is wide open, so you can fly a spot game and go hunt them the same day. That's illegal. The problem they were having was people putting game cameras on public land around water holes, especially taking pictures of, whatever animal came to whatever water hole at whatever time. They were going over to websites and selling that information to a hunter. I don't call those people much of a hunter, but we'll lump them in for right now, and we'll carve them out later, so to speak. But in Arizona, and there's Utah, and there's a couple other states that are doing this too, no longer be allowed to use remote cameras to help track wildlife. Trail cameras often are mounted during water holes or common wildlife feeding areas, take photos while nobody's around, allow hunters to determine which animals visit the area, learn their patterns and habits, making it easier to hunt them. You can still use a game camera for hunting, though they you can't use it for hunting, though they can still be used for research, general wildlife viewing, and to protect property. And it's the ban that starts in July the 31st and goes through December 31st. So you can still use them during the, you know, I have one game camera. It was a gift. I put it out in April to check to see how many coyotes I have. That's about it. I have used it a couple other times to take pictures of some pigs, but I do not use it to hunt, to pattern, to know what's out there. When I go hunting, I go more so now just to get away from everything, to enjoy being out there where I don't have to worry about my phone going off. It still does. I just ignore it most of the time. But I don't go out there to involve more technology in something that traditionally has been technology free, and we are creeping ever closer to a line about what is fair chase when it comes to technology. Now, don't drag fishing into this. That's the famous comeback for a lot of people. Oh, what about sonar and all in fishing? Totally different. Totally, there is no catch and release in hunting, folks. You don't magically release that animal back into the wild once you shoot it. Fishing, you can do it all the time. You can't make a fish bite, you know, to begin with. So it doesn't matter how much. And a lot of pros will tell you the electronics on a boat can be the best thing or the worst thing, because it can lull you into a sense of, well, there they are. I can see them. I can make them bite. And you can't make them bite. So we're going to have to address this. It's a topic that's coming. I just have to figure out how to handle it and who to include on it. But it's something for all of us to start thinking about. And with that, we have a calendar of events brought to you by Capital City Lake Murray Country. The Charleston Boat Show is January 28th through 30th at the Convention Center there in Charleston. There's parking information. It's, gosh, I can't even read. My eyes are so blurry right now. But it's coming. Go down and take advantage. South Carolina Boating and Fishing Alliance will be there. If you need to sign up for an individual membership there, there'll be people there and information for you to check that out. Here's the first call for the day. The South Carolina Bird Hunters Association Youth Trial, hosted by Sumter County Bird Hunters, is coming January the 29th at noon down in Pinewood, South Carolina. The Youth Stakes Pacifics is open to all youth handlers in high school and below. This is a walking youth field trial. Gun dog standards, 20-minute maximum brace, no charge. If you don't have a dog to run, we'll provide one for you. This is the perfect, you know, you talk about opportunity and access. This is a perfect opportunity to just go see what field trialing or bird hunting is all about. So that's, you need to get involved with that by January 26th. But that's coming Saturday, January 29th. At the same time, they're having a walk-in field trial in Pinewood. It starts on the 29th and 30th. Let me see if I can get this straight. Yeah. The grounds is Nick Mallon Kennels in Pinewood, South Carolina. They got directions for you. You can go to the SCBH website to get this at South Carolina Bird Hunters. They have an open puppy, shooting dog, open derby, amateur puppy, amateur shooting dog, amateur derby, and they haven't announced the judges yet for that. So that's another opportunity. The Spartanburg First Baptist Church is having their annual wild game dinner coming up February the 3rd, and again on February 5th. Join us for gator bites, venison hash, chili dub, bog, catfish, and more. They got some door prizes. Randy McPherson is going to speak. Dinner's $20. Kids 12 and under are children under 12 or $12, and you can buy a table. Contact the church office for more information on that. And I'll save this for later because I really have time to get to it. So we'll get that one on the next one. So anyway, hang on. Got Brian New coming up talking about the Elite Series, bass fishing, and how to make it on the big stage. So y'all hang on. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Me and my husky voice and everything. Man, it's been a week of it, and you know, thankfully it's close to the weekend, and We're here on Saturday afternoon. Glad you tuned in. And it's going to be a fun one for the next little bit because got another new guest to Woods and Water, South Carolina, somebody who's not new to me. I've been around him for more than a few years now, but he's been a North Carolina boy, and you know me, I can't cross over and go up across that border way too much. Once in a while to include Brian Thrift, and once in a while to include Matt Airy, but we got a new guy here, literally Brian New, just moved to South Carolina, living in Saluda now, on the Elite Series. So Brian, welcome to South Carolina, and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Oh, thanks for having me, Roger. It's I tell you, I love it down here. I actually, you know, my wife's from Saluda, so that's how I wound up here. But right. You know, really, if you kind of go down the storyline, fishing's why I wound up here. Because if I wouldn't have been at Lake Murray striper fishing, I wouldn't have met my wife. So,
that's right. I've heard the story.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, everything works out for a reason.
Well, who caught more stripers, you or her, or were you fishing?
Oh,
of course.
She's not here, so.
And we can talk big when they're not around, you know it?
Right.
Just remember, this is on the radio, so it might catch up to you.
It probably will. It typically normally does, but
of course,
you know, you pay for it whenever you have to.
That's exactly right. It doesn't hurt enough yet to not be worth it.
Exactly.
There we go. But seriously, Brian, you know, you and I, we've known each other for more than a few years. I mean, I guess first few times we met each other were probably at ICAST.
Mm-hmm.
But I think going back to one of the first memories I have of you is in 2016 when the FLW Tour was on Lake Hartwell, and somehow or another Joe Pogger signed me up to fish as a co-angler. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how that happened. And Matt Airy was nice enough to take me out practicing one day. I hadn't bass fished in years, and he took me out. And I remember we put in at Portman, pulled out at Portman, and we loaded our boat up and everything, and you and Brian Thrift pulled up, loaded y'all stuff, kind of pulled off the side of the road. Matt and I pulled up beside you, and as Matt got up there, he said, "Watch this." He said, "Thrift ain't going to tell you nothing." And so he pulled up, rolled his window down. You know, Matt and Brian are good friends. And he said, "Brian, you find anything worth, you know?" And Brian's over there just kind of mumbling, rum, you know. I don't... And you were standing over on the other side of the boat putting tackle away or something like that. And Matt kind of turned and looked at me and goes, "Watch this." He goes, "Hey, New, you find anything?" And you were like, rum, 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 rum. And we pulled off. He said, "Man, Thrift's done corrupted New like everybody else."
Oh, man, that's funny.
Oh, but secretive. But that, you know, hey, that's, you know, fishermen are second only to duck hunters when it comes to secret spots and all, you know it?
Oh, man. Well, I guess so.
Oh, but man. Yeah, and after that, you know, it was ICAST. You're always around the Greenfish Tackle booth. You know, and we had some good times there with John Hare and Geddes. Oh my gosh. It just like, boom, now you're on the Elite Series, Brian. Second year on the Elite Series.
Yeah, honestly, it doesn't seem real. I mean, it's been a long time, a long process, but honestly, like on one hand, it seems like I started trying to make it yesterday, and the other hand, it seems like I've been doing it for a lifetime. And I have been doing
it
for my lifetime.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But no, I mean, I've had a lot of fortunes along the way. And I, honestly, like one thing that I really, and I don't know why, maybe I just didn't realize it until this past year, fishing the elites. Like, you know, us as fishermen, we always relate everything back to fishing.
Sure.
Well, I'm fishing all the time, so I relate everything back to life. And like people look at what I do as fishing, but in reality, it's life, because whatever your, you know, whatever your dream is and whatever you want to do in life, if you work hard, live right, and never give up, you come to a roadblock and you figure you learn from that roadblock and you figure out how to get past it. you know, you finally, you eventually succeed. And that's where, that's my story, you know, somewhat in a nutshell as far as fishing, but that's in life. That's just everything in life, whatever you want to do. I mean, if you want to be a, you know, a race car driver or an accountant or a doctor, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what you want to do. You can be great at it. It's just, you know, not taking no for an answer and not letting a little setback. And people talk about, I mean, I'm talking about a roadblock. A roadblock's not necessarily a roadblock. All a roadblock is a lesson. And it's preparing you for what you're going to deal with in the future. I mean, I could go over so many situations. Like, there was one thing that pops out. Like, I had an issue on my boat in 2020. And I learned how to fix the issue. I learned what it was and how to fix it. And then during one of the elite tournaments last year, I had the exact same thing happen. So, yeah, it cost me a little bit of time in 2020 when it happened. But I learned from it, and I knew exactly how to fix it. I didn't have to make a phone call or hunt for this tool or that tool. And, I mean, I was able to fix that problem very quick because I experienced that roadblock in the past. And, you know, it just made everything more efficient.
What? We're less than 6 minutes into this, and you've already gotten a life lesson, folks. Pay attention. There's more of that to come. Mike Such did a great job in this article on Bassmaster. I encourage any of you listening, go to Bassmaster.com, look up the article on Brian New. It's titled "Daily Limit: Brian's new Lease on Life." Ugh, you can get that one out there, right? And this is going to be all about getting to know Brian New. So I'm just going to pull some things out of here. Talk about your first boat.
So, my first boat or my first watercraft?
Well, okay. Well, Willis, since you're a professional fisherman, this is your first boat.
Okay. So, I was actually telling this story at lunch today.
Oh, wow. But,
so I grew up on Lake Wylie.
Okay.
And,
North Carolina, South Carolina side.
North Carolina.
All right, Belmont. Okay. Yep.
I always went to South Carolina to get gas because it was cheaper.
Of course it is. Yeah.
But anyway, so, I was 6 or 7 years old and, you know, we didn't have a boat. We didn't have a lot. We didn't go hungry, but we didn't have a lot. We didn't have any fancy things. And, you know, the jet ski lifts that you just drive up on, like it's just a floating jet ski lift, basically.
Okay.
So we had a flood and one of those jet ski lifts floats up, you know, it washes up on the bank at my house. And, you know, a week or so goes by, nobody comes and claims it. So I didn't have a boat. I wanted a boat. So I said, I can use that thing. It floats. I'll just get on it. But then I was like, well, I don't have a paddle. So I went out to the shop and I found me old 2x4, beat the old nails out of it. And so I had a jet ski lift that floated up on the bank and a 2x4 for a paddle. And here I am, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old out there paddling around on Lake Wylie with the little Zebco 33, probably.
Sure.
I loved it. Like, never thought twice about it. Never wished I had something better or this or that. And I was just thankful for what I had.
Ingenuity too. Hey, yeah, I want to get out on the water. This is an opportunity for me to get off the bank and out on the water.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you take what you have and make the best out of it. I mean, you know, what's that old saying, how to make a chicken salad out of chicken poop? Well, hey, that's true. I mean, it's a funny saying, but it's the truth. I mean, you know, it don't matter if you have all the nice things, you're eventually going to come into a situation where you don't have the tool for the job and you got to make a tool work.
Yep.
For that job. You got to use what you have.
Talk about the FLW days for just a few minutes. We've got about 2 minutes or so left in this segment. Talk about those, the co-angler side of the FLW tournaments.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a big part of my career. I mean, I started out fishing the BFLs as a co-angler. I mean, because, you know, I didn't have a boat.
Sure.
And it was like $100 entry fee, which honestly took me 2 weeks to make, saving every dime I made, you know, a week in high school to pay those entry fees.
Yep.
But so I fished those and I took every step. Like I never skipped a step. I made enough, or I learned enough on, you know, on the BFL level as a co-angler and made enough money to fund the next level. Actually, 2012 was the first year I fished the FLW Tour as a co-angler. And I had a family friend, owner of McCorkle Concrete, come on board, and you know, he helped me out a lot and paid my entry fees. And so that's, you know, me and Matt Airy started traveling together.
Okay.
And you know, it just kind of went from there. I did that for a couple years, won the cup at Lake Murray where I live now.
Yep, that's right.
And then the following year I started fishing the FLW series. I think it's a Toyota series now, right, as a boater.
Yep.
Had some success, but it was every step of the way. I mean, I never skipped a step. I would learn enough on this level and make enough money on this level to fund the next level. And I made enough money fishing a few times to go ahead and take that top level step. And it just didn't seem right for me at the time financially. Yeah, I had the money in my pocket, but you know, if I go out there for 1 year and don't make a dime, I'm dead broke.
Right.
So I didn't want to do that.
Outrun your coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done that with my wife, so we deal with everything in life.
But we only get lucky like that once.
That's right. Yeah. You don't waste it when you get it.
That's exactly right. Well, yeah. Man, I think we've had a good start to this whole thing. We're gonna take a little break, folks. Gosh, man, we could go on like this forever. I can tell, as long as you're having a good time, we'll have to do this again, Brian.
Oh, for sure.
All right, well, hang on. Let's go through a break. We'll be back on the other side. More Brian New and bass fishing. At least I haven't, Brian, at least I haven't wound up on the floor in a coffin fit, right?
Not yet.
thankful for the little things in life.
Exactly.
I appreciate you talking more than me today, because I'm sure people don't want to hear my husky voice any more than they have to. But, you know, you wound up the last segment talking about, you know, financially outkicking your coverage. And, what a great life lesson for a lot of people. And you've thrown out some gems already today. But, you know, in 19, you won the Ray Scott Championship down in Eufaula. And you qualified for the FLW Tour all in the same, you know, same little window there. What was that like? And then talk about you put it best, the roadblock that popped up shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, kind of backing up just a little bit, like, yeah. I had qualified for the Fish FLW Tour a handful of times before, but the financial part was just not there at, you know, at those points. And in 19, you know, things, I had a, you know, extremely blessed year and just a lot of fortunes, and financially everything was good to go, whether I got any sponsors or not. And you know, there was rumors going around, you know, about,
oh yeah,
FLW being sold and this and that. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of rumors all the time, all over the place. So, you know, you don't really know what to think of them. So I qualify, you know, financially I'm ready to go. And then, you know, getting close to that time to sign up, they announced the buyout. And then, you know, obviously they announced their plans and their, you know, what their plans for the future were. And I just did not like them. I didn't, practiced golf my whole life to go play putt-putt, you know, so it's and, you know, I'm not, like, down in what they're doing, but it's just not something that I wanted to
not
be
for you,
of.
Right.
Mean, I, you know, I want to be a fisherman, not a TV show guy. And, but, yeah, anyway, so I decided to take a different path. I said, you know, for me, the best option for me is to try to qualify for the Elite Series. And so I signed up and kind of going back financially, like, even though I'm financially good, you know, you still got to make good business and good investment decisions.
Sure.
And to me, it didn't make sense to fish both divisions of the Opens.
Okay.
And, so, and kind of well, quick on that. So it, the Eastern, that year, the Eastern division for the top four in the points qualify for the Elites. And then the top four in the Centrals qualify for the Elites. So then if you fish all eight events, the top four from the combined would qualify also.
This, so this is the year when we only had Centrals and Southerns.
Correct, yeah. Yep. So if you fish one division, you're fishing for four places. If you fish for two divisions, you're fishing for 12 places. But four of those places are only against, like, 52 guys. So you're you know, upping your odds.
Shoot, yeah.
So, and this is kind of the perfect storyline once again. I sign up just the Easterns. I go, and I win the very first one. Qualify for the Bassmaster Classic.
Right.
At that point, you know, at that point, I said, well, it'd be dumb for me not to sign up for the Centrals. So I did. I go on. I win the Opens overall Angler of the Year.
Yep.
And I qualify for the Elites. If I only fished the Easterns, which I was originally planning, I don't qualify for the Elites.
Right.
If I win the second Open of the year instead of the first, I'm already past signing up for the Centrals.
Wow.
So I still do not qualify for the Elites. I had to win that first Open to get to the Elites. Or I would, I mean, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't have happened.
Oh,
and what do? I go to St. John's River,
Florida,
and my very first Elite. So,
yeah,
my first true professional level event, I win. And if I didn't win the very first tournament the year before, I don't get that first professional, you know, event. Not, at least not in 21.
Right, not in 21. And you may, and who knows how long it might have taken you to qualify for the Elites through the Open.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not an easy thing to
do. No, it's not an easy thing to do.
There's, you know, tremendous anglers that have been doing it for years and haven't qualified. And,
yeah,
you know, it's not anything against their ability. I mean, yeah, on paper it kind of looks that way, but you can't have to qualify. You cannot have one bad day. You cannot have one bad day all year long, or you're not going to qualify. It's just simple as that. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but it's just shows that much, you know, that's why it's that much more prestigious and maybe a goal or
shoot. Yeah.
Just something else to reach for. I mean, it's that much more to reach for.
Talk, we got about 5 minutes left. Time flies on this show. Talk about the first win on St. John's. I mean, you know, first day wasn't great. Second day you did better. Third, you know, going into fourth day, the final day, you were like, okay, top 10, I'm sure it's in your mind, top 10 first event, I am good. You're about 6 pounds, 5.5 pounds behind. Talk about the ride in and then being on stage, the last man standing.
Well, I kind of like the way you say the first win at St. John's, because we start off there this year as well. So kind of sounds like you're saying I'm going to win again this
year.
Well,
I'm going to leave that door open. I don't want to put any pressure on you, but you know, it's obvious that Florida is good to you and you make some good decisions in Florida. And so why not, you know?
Oh, well, I can tell you we're going to be shooting for it,
shoot,
but
yeah.
No, you know, kind of making a little joke there, but hopefully it doesn't turn out to be a joke.
No, I'd like to see you win again.
But, yeah, I mean, so the first day we had a 3-hour and 15-minute fog delay. My very first professional ever event, a 3-hour and 15-minute fog delay. So that's like, come on, really? Is this how we're going to start? And I only had 12 pounds. But realistically, that really wasn't that bad. I think I was in the low to mid-20s the first day. And, like, I caught my last three fish were within just a few minutes. Just a few minutes of check-in. And, if I don't catch those few fish, I don't win the tournament. I don't make the final day cut.
Wow.
But, yeah, so, fast forward to days 2, 3, and 4, everything went great. I mean, technically, everything went right, great. The first day, it was
short day.
Yeah, it was just short.
Yeah.
And, going into the final day, the top 10 of my very first event, I wouldn't say I'm satisfied, but I'm very happy with that, really wasn't, I'm not going to say I wasn't planning on winning, but the chances of that happening are not great.
Right.
And I go out there and I just have a phenomenal day. I mean, just one of those days that you want to go and have fun fishing. That's what I had. And it was the final day of my very first professional level event. So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, every decision I made was perfect.
Yeah.
Everything worked out. Nothing went wrong. And so it comes time to go back in. I've got a long run to go. And I run an iPad on my console at my boat, mainly for like Google Earth and some notes and this and that.
Okay.
But it's connected to my phone as well. Or something. I don't really know how that works, but I get text messages on it as well, if they're, I guess, from Apple or an iPhone or something. So I'm running across the lake, and now we have a rule, we can't look at,
right,
messages and phone calls, this or that. But I'm running across the lake, and my screen lights up. Well, it just caught my attention, so I just kind of glanced down at it. And the whole screen's full of these text messages. Well, I didn't read them, but, when I look down at it, there's some names that pop out. And it's like Brian Thrift and all these guys. Like, if these guys are texting me in the middle of the tournament that I know that they know I can't communicate with them, something's, I knew I had a great day.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to fall. I was going to move up a little bit. And when I seen those, it just kind of all come together. It's like, man, I had all the camera boats were on me.
Yep.
Pretty much all day, and just hearing people in the background as they went by, that had been following the live coverage. I was like, I think I won this thing. And man, all of a sudden the bottom fell out. It started pouring rain. And I was running, pretty much wide open.
I tell you what, Brian, if you got just a few more minutes, I'm going to carry you over in the next segment if you got a few more minutes.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to rush this. This is the best part. Y'all hang on. we're gonna carry Brian over into the fourth segment. So Woods and Water will be back after this break. Hang on. All right, enough of the music, because the story is just too good to gloss over. But I wanted, and I appreciate Brian taking some additional time out of his day unplanned to continue this. All right, Brian, you're running wide open. The bottom drops out. Take it from there.
Yeah, so I, I'm grinning from ear to ear. I never feel a drop of rain. Now, I did have a pretty awesome AFCO rain suit on, so that definitely helped. So we get back to Palatka, check in, and everybody's running down, my wife and daughter, they're all excited, jacked up, and, had some friends there as well. And then I start answering these phone calls, this, that, and you know, we go weigh in. We got us a blue trophy. I mean, awesome stuff, man. Just, you know, a story you can't write any better. I mean, you couldn't script it any better than it went out. It's just a true blessing. I mean, lifelong work. It's not over.
Shit, but, just beginning.
It's, you know, for that to happen, it is just truly, truly just a huge blessing.
And for those of us that were watching live that day, it was so much fun. So much fun to watch it.
Fun.
Oh, yeah, it was. Well, real quick, got Classic coming up here in a couple of weeks, well, a few weeks now. Lake Hartwell, it not one of your favorite places to go fish?
It used to not be.
Oh, okay.
It used to not be.
It's changed a little bit now.
Yeah, so our buddy Neil Paul, you know, over there at Visit Anderson, used to, every time I would drive over Hartwell, I'd take a little video and I'd show it out there to the lake and show the Hartwell sign and I'd flip it to Bird and send it to him. Just a little joke, you know. And, but you know what? I got over that. The opening 22, I just barely missed a check.
Right.
So realistically, financially, it wasn't a good tournament, but realistically, it was a good tournament. And, but on top of that, I learned a lot. I learned where I was going wrong all along because the hole was so big and I just got a different approach on it. I spent a lot of time over there this fall.
Okay.
I'm super excited. I'm not sitting here saying I'm going to win, but I got a 1 in 55 chance of winning.
Sure.
And I'm excited. It, you know, but right now we're focused on Florida. We got three events in Florida. Then we're going to come on. And then it's all about the Classic. Take it one tournament at a time. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an awesome event. It's the Bassmaster Classic. There's never been an event like it. There'll never be another event like it. And I'm a part of it. And just that as itself is a true blessing. But man, we got a blue trophy.
Yeah.
We're going to try to get a couple more blue ones.
Shoot, yeah.
But come first week of March, we're going to try to get us a gold one.
A gold one. And we'll be there watching you, bud. Well, look, I appreciate you taking time. None of y'all do this like you said, outrunning your coverage financially. None of us do this kind of stuff without sponsors. You worked in AFCO there really nicely on the first time around, but take a minute, talk about your sponsors, and then I'll let you go.
Man, you know, I've got some people that's been behind me for a long time. And real quick, like, if I'm going to partner with somebody, it's going to be something I truly believe in. And I'm not just going to sit around and try to sell something that I'm not going to use, something that I don't believe in, something that I don't think is a great product. So, you know, I've been very picky about the, you know, the companies that I work with. And on top of that, just like all the guys that I work with, or, you know, or companies, they're great people and all around. And obviously, you know, AFCO, Greenfish Tackle's been with me for a long time. They're great guys. Pulse Fish Lures, you know, that stuff's gonna be a player in the Classic.
Oh, it will.
Fitzgerald Rods, they make some, you know, in my opinion, the best rod on the market. I was using them for years before I ever had a, you know, even a relationship with the guys there. Obviously, Zoom Baits. I mean, you know, if you fish, you know what Zoom Baits are.
Fish still love them.
Hard baits, Sunline. Great fluorocarbon, just every type of line. Gamagatsu hooks. I mean, you know, once again, if you fish, you know Gamagatsu is the best.
Sure.
Power pole, shallow water anchors, and the charge system just revolutionized, you know, the boats. You know, fresh water, salt water, everything. But I tell you, so the salt, I don't know where I was going with that.
I don't know where you're going with that one.
So, anyone in the South Carolina area, you know, if you've got any moisture management problems, you know, under your house, and chances are you have more than you think you do. And that's seriously the truth. I actually worked in that, you know, that industry a little bit, and was very surprised with the amount of, you know, issues that are under the majority of the houses, and you just never know. And but the guys at JRA Exterminating, they can help you with all of that, and obviously exterminating as well. One of, you know, Falcon boats come on board this year. I'm extremely excited to run a Falcon. I've never had a new boat, never had a new truck, never had a new anything in my entire life. It's Everlast name. But now I got a new Falcon boat. And, man, I'm just going to be more comfortable fishing than I ever have. But also another, you know, one of my great partners is Consolidated Pipe. So anybody in the construction industry, you know, whatever it is, industrial, you need pipe. And the guys at Consolidated Pipe can help you with whatever needs you need, you have there. And they're once again, they're great people to work with. They make a great product. And just, you know, everyone I work with, I'm truly blessed and happy to have them aboard.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, thanks for your time. Good luck, man. I can't wait to see you out on Hartwell here shortly and probably somewhere else along the tour this year. And thanks for taking time to be on the show. And this won't be our last as long as you had a good enough time.
Oh yeah, I had a great time, Roger. Thanks for having me. And yeah, we're gonna shoot for a couple blues, and then we're going for gold.
Good enough, man. Well, you take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
See you, bud.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, I really appreciate Brian taking a little extra time. He had another big interview. Shortly after we finished this one, he had another one to do. He's been in print. He's a natural. I think he enjoys it. And some pretty good life lessons there in short time. Brian's 32. He's not a newcomer to the fishing industry and this game at all. And I think he's got a home here for a really long time because he's done it the right way. And I look forward to having him back on. But, yeah, again, I appreciate him taking time. Like I said, if you want to know a little bit more about him, check out the Bassmaster article by Mike Sukin. And, you know, he's going to be here in town coming up really shortly. And you can check out his Facebook page, Instagram, whatever, Brian New Fishing. If you go on Facebook, he posted a picture of himself in the left front rod locker on his Falcon the other day. And that's pretty cool. Never having a new boat before. And now he's got one, and it's a Falcon made right here in Newberry, South Carolina. So, pretty cool. I every once in a while I fall for this stuff. And Mr. Wanamaker is a really good salesman down at Wanamaker Seed Company in St. Matthews, and I ended up buying some RRR from him, Radish Rape, and oh, it was another one, R, I forget it, what it is, Radish Rape, Turnip, but it was some kind of turnip. And, you know, I always hope, you always hear, oh man, when it gets cold and the sugar content goes up in the leaves and all, the fish really start hammering it, and oh, you'll love it. You might not be able to hunt over it, but the deer will enjoy it later in the season. The deer haven't touched mine. I have a beautiful stand of this, of red top radishes, this turnip that's about, I mean, some of them I've got are like 8 or 10 inches long and probably 3 inches in diameter. And then this beautiful rape that's growing up out of the ground and all. I planted it in my best food plot, you know, to give it the most, I mean, nothing. So I, you know, before I just got aggravated and threw up my hands at it, National Deer Alliance actually came out with a study back in December 22nd of 2021, so not just about a month old now, that says, and it's brassicas, do they actually get sweeter after a frost? And so it goes through and talks about, you know, the rape, kale, turnips, you know, radishes, whatever else. You know, most experienced food plotters certainly will tell you that the deer more often in a brassica food plot during cold weather, and our mamas have told us not to pick greens to eat until after a frost. But why is that? You know, we're taught that starches is a complex carbohydrate that's broken down or hydrolyzed into simple sugars by enzymes and acids in the mouth and digestive tract, but cold weather was never mentioned. Oh, it goes on through, you know, if cold weather really does sweeten brassicas, increased sugar levels will explain why deer may be attracted more in winter and why brassicas planting in the deep south may never be touched. And they go through some of that. But anyway, it comes out that that's not always true. And they, if I can get to it here. Okay. Pre-frost and post-frost nutrition factors for popular brassicas. So we'll take radish leaves. Not much. Radish taproots, even less. Turnip leaves, just a little bit more in sugars. And turnip taproots, no difference. We may never know exactly why deer are more finicky over brassicas in some areas than others. However, few cool season plantings provide the forage biomass during winter that brassicas do, or provide different forage parts that are high in protein, the leaves, and simple sugars, the taproot. If deer on your property eat brassicas, it is certainly worth planting some to provide late season hunting opportunities for deer that are seeking energy-rich food items. Just don't count on the deer being attracted to brassicas simply because there was a hard frost last night. So I've been had again, but hey, there's worse things to be done. Thanks for tuning in. Sorry I'm a little husky. I've been a few days with a fever and everything, and I'm dealing with the head cold, and hopefully I'll be over it soon. As always, thanks for tuning in. I hope you have a great week. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can, and don't forget the camera. See you back here. Hopefully Taylor will be back with me next week on More Woods and Water, South Carolina. You hit me from behind, 'cause I'm gone to catch